Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
The point, I think the principal point behind the prison movement is to prove to the establishment that the concentration camp technique, the reversion to the second dimension of fascism, the terrorist face, but to prove that the terrorism won't work on us, it won't stop our movement, that nothing, actually short of death, is going to stop our movement. It's progress to the point now where the courts are they're in a position where they're not pressured into giving us some sort of appeasement, and that of course catches the prison personnel, staff, the pigs here up in Cross. They have no way at all whatsoever now to protect themselves except through sheer, brutal, open terror. You understand what I'm saying? The comrades here, the pigs feel the comrades here lost their reservation, their hold.
They still feel that?
But they're convinced of it now.
Maybe not for the last week.
Right. I'm talking about the whole state. I'm talking about throughout the state. Mm-hmm. You've heard about the intentions of strike. Yeah, they intended to strike and ask for increased wage. What do you call it? The hazard pay? Wait. It catches the prison pigs up in a cross. They know that the courts are in a mood now to appease. They also know that the comrades don't fear the courts any longer. That forces them to revert to terrorism. Not terrorism. Just 2 days ago, they beat one black almost to death in the hospital.
One of the things that people on outside are wondering is how you can use your case and other cases to work as an organizing tool. Without bypassing all means, legal means, court means, mass action, stuff like that. How can people on the outside, what kind of things can they do to make real changes in that kind of stuff and put checks on them?
Well, it fits right in with the monumental problem, the monumental historical problem, the antithesis of sitting in a hole. Our opinion is that the reason we haven't been able to move forward is because left-wing factions can't unite. They just haven't been able to unite here in this country and very few other countries. And we've been hoping that on our substructural level, the substructural level of the prison movement, we could possibly provide an example for the rest of the movement. And because the oppression of the need to unite in our particular substructural level is overt and clear. Mm-hmm. We're faced with overt and clear terrorism, oppression. And being that our need is greatest, we figure that we're hoping, we have been hoping, that we could first do the leadership of the Vanguard Party. We could first involve the community, show the community that the difference is the National Advertising Council has convinced us that our present really are illusion. We want to convince them that the community that the differences are illusion. Of course, we run into some snags. The snags being, as far as I'm concerned, being part of the press mentality in general. the things I've noticed, the problems I've noticed, generally center around the fact that people don't quite understand what democratic centralism is. They seem to, now, our ideal is to project ourselves into the future, of course, but at the same time, we have to realize that we have to understand that we're not quite all capable of, well, our opinions are equal, and we have to have some sort of centralism.
Okay.
Our preference, of course, is democratic centralism, you know. And people don't understand that that's a necessity at this stage. That's what we're working towards is the point where all opinions will be equal, all men equal. But right now, we have to have the guidance and the purposeful leadership of a vanguard party. Like Lenin says, Central Committee, you know, General Staff of the People's Party.
How do you think that kind of vanguard party can be developed, or do you think that it has been developed in the Black Panther Party?
I'm Black Panther, of course. Vanguard Party, I'm a Black Panther Party.
Do you think that the Black Panther Party is the vanguard party for just the black community and the white community?
No. I believe pretty soon all those questions, as far as I'm concerned, will be cleared up. The paper is going to run a series of articles where I discuss the nature of fascism in general, and in particular, towards the end, the form that it took here in the United States. In one paragraph or two, you'll find a statement that, one of my principal beliefs is that the fact that we're the most oppressed class, most oppressed segment of society, the fact that we're at the bottom of the pyramid, we have to take the initiative. Is that background noise?
Yeah,
no, we're going to have to take the initiative. I feel that our job is to begin the process. Once the process is begun, once we've provided the example, it's my hope, or our hope, that the intercommunal ideal will spread from our community to yours, the other community. But of course, we know what the term vanguard means. It took us out front.
Well, there's one, in one interview by Lane Brown in San Francisco paper, The Good Times, she made a statement that they asked her what she thought of weathermen and their actions. She made a statement that I don't know what the weathermen are doing, but I know that they're not the party, the vanguard party, because they're not the Black Panther Party, and the Black Panther Party is the vanguard party, and thus they're not the vanguard party. And a lot of people were wondering about two things. One, her concept of vanguard party, and two, the reasons that she didn't know what Weatherman was doing, assuming that they are engaging in some sort of revolutionary activity.
Well, I won't try to second guess for Elaine's definition of vanguard party, but I just gave you a brief summation of why. Mm-hmm. I feel that Black Panther Party and Black people, the Black Panther Party, of course, is the largest black organization in the country. And it's a, of course, it's really the only black revolutionary organization in the country, as far as I'm concerned. The reason, like I said, that we have to be vanguard is that we're faced with a clear-cut oppression, or a clear-cut necessity, objective necessity. Objective and subjective conditions are correct in the black community for revolution. To get to your original question, though, I think that the real reasoning behind Elaine's statement is that if you consider the focal motor theory, if you consider the Fulcrum theory, if you go back and consider it, you see that the idea incorporates two separate thrust, a political and military thrust. The focal motor, the initiative, the push, the motor of the revolution has to be backed by a political force. You understand? When the man steps out, with the idea of providing an example, and there's no one in the background to fill in for, to build dual power. He did to rebuild the people's world as he destroys it. Well, yeah. He left with nothing.
Well, that's the question that was posed to Weatherman at that time, and that's why they changed.
Yeah, the whole thing. The whole thing is the focal motor theory incorporates the focal motor theory incorporates well, it's a monumental idea that calls for some understanding now. The old CP attacks the Weatherman for being counter-revolutionary, and the basis for their attack, I think is altogether incorrect. The real reason why they can't be an art more effective is that they have no organs for political activity. They have no political outlet. The point is, while destroying the opposition or the establishment's capacity to produce, at that same time, we're supposed to be also revealing the people's will.
Uh-huh.
That's the political people's job.
Yeah, listening to that, there's a lot of, in terms of the white male left, particularly the middle-class white male left, to many, the primary form of oppression to them is alienation from life in general and seeing genocide go on in front of their eyes and them
mm-hmm.
in a position of powerlessness, even if they wanted to do something, although they've been told that they shouldn't. That's a very, somewhat intangible form of oppression, though it's very real. And it's kind of hard to organize around concrete things, you know, to benefit, you know, to set up real programs. How do you think a white community, the white youth culture community, can organize around real changes that have to be done around prison reform, about building the party, about building survival programs, pending revolution. Although that means a different thing in white community.
Mm.
I mean, survival, you know, the freaks are surviving, they're getting welfare, and they're smoking dope, and, you know, thinking it's real good.
You know what we're talking about? We're talking about objective conditions. And what you're saying is that the objective conditions in the white middle class aren't correct for the political programs and the political thrusts that are possible in the black community. And you're asking for, you're asking for alternatives. But I feel that when we start talking about objective conditions, I don't think that we should separate what I term psychological or subjective conditions too much from, you know, objective conditions. I'm saying that a man can get mad enough to fight over what you called U.S. involvement in Indochina and so forth. A man can get mad enough to fight over that.
U.S. involvement in what?
Yeah, U.S. involvement. All right. But that whole question follows the statement I made a while ago. We'll have to provide an example. And
that was Weatherman's objective.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to provide an example. The programs and the organization of the structures and so forth will have to begin with us, because that's a follow-up of my statement. We'll have to begin with us because the objective conditions are correct with us, and we're hoping that the other community will be affected in some way. All right, their motivation, like you say, it doesn't have to be overt, let's say, starvation. It could
mm-hmm.
be psychological.
Yeah, it goes very deep.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Berkeley, what we've been setting up, or what have been set up for the past few years, is there's street clinics and there's auto mechanics and and those kind of things to organize it from our community. But we find that people who use that are basically just freaks, you know, kids. Mm-hmm. And if people in Oakland don't relate to them, and we'd like to be able to change that, although they're very, you know, skeptical.
I don't think we should discount either. I don't think we should discount the broad sections of the American middle class. I don't think we should discount the fact that they're also economically strained. Economically strained. Their economic position is far from secure.
Oh, that's clear. But like
the point is that the revolution is offering them economic security. I'm certain, positive that we haven't gone beyond the point where the revolution no longer in this country is separated from the economic motive, man.
No, I don't think it is either. Mm. But sometimes people don't look far enough, though, and don't look.
Of course, the average white collar worker sees only a short term. An average blue collar worker sees only a short term interest. I understand that, but I believe the political point would be to make him see that there is still a very clear and present economic motive for revolt, revolution, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I won't discount that at all, but like in your article on withdrawal, you know, one concerning that, there's in white movement there's been a lot less national mass actions, you know, like the moratorium thing, rallies for Bobby, stuff like that. There's a lot more small groups with a lot of personal struggle around the way we fuck ourselves over, you know, the way men in the community fucking over women, the way that we're not dealing with, you know, the racism that's in us in terms of struggling around black people's demands. And so what we've ended up with lately is kind of May Day actions. I've been reading about that and that kind of stuff. And there's, on the other hand, the Days of Rage, the Weathermen riots in Chicago, where people were shot fighting, you know, pigs and stuff. And every once in a while, people get pissed off and have been rioting on the Ave on Telegraph Avenue. And people are a lot wondering what the you know, ramifications of those kind of actions are and what real changes they're going to bring about.
I think that any type of practice, any type of mass action is productive. Because remember we were speaking of changing attitudes. We were speaking of objective and subjective conditions. The fastest way to change any conditions that aren't correct, I believe, is with trauma. Keep them in uproar. You need to keep things disrupted. And let that be the normal state of things, disruption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I subscribe to all forms. I support all forms of disruption. But not at the same time. Don't get the mistaken idea that I'm also subscribing to apolitical actions or apolitical activities that don't have a clear-cut political purpose, that aren't working within a clear-cut political matrix. But really, in my wildest imagination, I can't see how any type of disruption in this country wouldn't fall within a purposeful political matrix.
You know, like there's a couple of stages that people go through, at least in the white movement. You know, the first stage may be outrage, mm-hmm. finding out what's been going on in Vietnam.
That's the very first. Yeah. But not just with Vietnam, but also with the culture, American culture.
Reading your book, yeah. You know, looking what's going on with the Indians in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we could sit here for an hour listen them off, but the next stage is how to organize around dealing with some of that stuff, and that's where people fall into the snag. You know, I got a feeling that people don't understand the concept of process a lot.
I agree with that. the protracted idea. My politics, of course, is Panther politics, of course, is a combination of Mao think and Guevara think. The two-stage revolution, and then of course the focal motor thing. Do we need to talk about revolution in two stages?
Well, one thing.
I mean, I'm talking about Mao's theory of revolution in two stages, making the necessary alliances at first with any group or any segment of society that's in opposition to or that's being exploited by the principal enemies. I'm talking about the men who have placed themselves at the center and above society, the fascists, manipulators. First, pulling these people together with, in some cases, with, using the loyalty, instinct. In other cases, pointing out the similarities in our condition, reaching for the entente, reaching for the reconciliation. That's what I think of in terms of mass action. But following the mass action and the destruction of the unrighteous. The second stage, of course, would be the socialization stage. I don't think we should worry right now that all of the people that we're allied with be strict Marxist-Leninists, just so that they're loyal to revolution. In reading Mao, you see that everywhere he's absorbing. In some places, even the Comprador bourgeois and points almost to suicide. Almost, he was compromising with the Comprador bourgeoisie and the national bourgeoisie in China. I'm not saying that we do the same thing, but that's what Comrade Huey Newton was saying in his article. His article relating to black capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people misunderstood that because
I didn't. I think I misunderstood that.
Everybody that misunderstood that have not read Mao Zedong's theory of a revolution in two stages.
Well, I don't know about Mao's theory, but it's just a question of being in touch with the black community and where the black community is at, which is another thing.
Yeah. But you understand that the guy that owns the drugstore on the corner. Even the guy that owns the...
Listen, man. That's a... Leave the drum go.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
All right. It's not here to see you.
Well, no, it's here to see you.
All right.
All right.
Well,
I was right in the middle of another...
Just on the corner.
Yeah. Even the guy that owns the shoe factory. I'm talking about the black. They aren't capitalists, of course, because of... Where do they buy their leather from, their rubber, their string? Where do they get the building from? Where do they, the machinery? See? The opposition at present is that guy that's making the machine tools, the huge few families that own it around the country, the men that send out expeditionary forces all across the world, rip off about 80% of the non-renewable resources. That's the enemy right now. Not the little black cat in the corner is trying to survive, really. Makes really no more in income than the average one of those. Of course, if we want to compare ourselves with China during their revolution, then we could call, I mean, I'm speaking in black right now. We could call the Nixon's black capitalism, or Nixon's black capitalists. We could call them the Comprador bourgeois. But of course, they're slated for destruction after the first stage, after we get rid of the real enemy.
Right, so the basic concept is that attacking the heightened contradictions first, and then deal with
the smaller contradictions later on. The socialization process comes later on. But really, behind the ideal is that we need allies. We need allies. That's what we need. We can't isolate ourselves. That's what he's saying.
There's a couple of problems that some people in this, discussed in the last couple of years. One is
wait, before you go any further, the articles that the comrade's been putting out in the paper, and he's been putting forward for us to try to relate to and understand the principal intent. The principal intent is to isolate targets of revolution. That's his intent. That's his whole intent right now. To isolate the targets of the revolution from the forces of the revolution. Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So, in misunderstanding that article on black capitalism, I mean, almost missed the whole technique behind our thrust. We're trying to isolate the real targets of revolution, and at the same time gather the forces of revolution. Go ahead now.
In terms of gathering the forces, there's a lot of division and movement. Saying the white takes just the white community alone. Women, particularly, are not into uniting with men who are constantly oppressing them sexually, and constantly treating them as sexual objects. And won't deal with them other than in terms of a fuck, And that's kind of hard for a woman to deal with. And they shouldn't have to, to deal with that.
No.
What can be done with that? Also, in terms of white people, people ain't going to work with white people who are racist and who ain't even deal with it. I mean, it's understandable that white people are going to be racist. It's understandable that men are going to be sexist when we've been brought up that way. But the question is, what point is being liberal?
No, that's a big question. That's a two-part question that I'm laying to go into. How much time do we have?
We got time, though. It's an important question. It's one of the most important in the movement right now.
I think that's
one of the criticisms of the Black Panther Party has been anti-gay people for one.
No, I don't think so. If you issued a statement that he's willing to join with anybody who's against the establishment.
Statement and practice are two different things sometimes.
Of course they're two different things. It's practice that's important.
And a lot of white people freaked out about practice around that. It happened around the Revolutionary Constitutional Convention and other.
But do you understand that the term vanguard implies an attempt to get out in front and pull the people into the proper channel, right? When that attempt fails, all we can do is attempt again, try again.
And under the
you can't accuse any members of the policy-making body, I don't think, anything like that. What we're trying to do now is get ourselves together.
I don't want to accuse anybody. I'm saying that when things happen like that, it's understandable and it should. That's the way it's going to happen. The mistakes are going to be made. The question is, how are they going to be dealt with, and how are effective modes of criticism, unity, going to be carried through?
We're going to reanalyze this whole woman question. We're going to analyze the whole thing. I think there's a big difference between the woman question in the black community and the woman question in the white community.
Sure.
But
your whole rule of black power. You have been listening to George Jackson, the prison interview he did back in 1971. That was a live prison interview. We're going to go ahead and get our show started in case you was wondering what you was listening to. Black Power, Black Power, Black Nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner, co-host, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our engineers on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina. Calling each and every Tuesday night, same black police, Fame Black Time at 845-277-9266. And be sure to press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation and participate. Tonight's topic, Black August, August 21st through the 22nd. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chairman, Nat Turner. All power to the people, comrade. Can you hear me?
Right on. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right on. Right on. Black power. All power to the people collectively. You know, you all rule. You know what I'm saying? Straight up. Yeah, we back again for this month of August. The whole month is a recognition of black liberation struggle from a political prisoner standpoint. The hypocritical so-called U.S. government parading itself around the world as a democracy, as a so-called free world, having that audacity to make that claim, yet it's violated its own citizens' human rights while accusing foreign countries of having political prisoners or political dissidents who have been unfairly and wrongly accused and locked up and prosecuted for crimes that they couldn't have committed or set up on trumped up charges because their views were basically opposed to that country's government and the way they label these countries on purpose for a purpose to socially engineer the mass population of this country as a dictatorship, totalitarian government, and so forth, authoritarian government, and so forth. That is a ploy on the part of the state. What do we mean by the state? The politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police who work in a concerted effort just as an engine with its various parts work collectively in order for an automobile to get from point A to point B without any problems. And, of course, with gas. We like to try to paint these little pictures, little vivid pictures, basic pictures to give our brothers and sisters who are not as knowledgeable as us, who are not as politicized as us, and which becomes a duty, a responsibility on our part. And as my comrade says, if not us, then who? And so that falls on our shoulders as the People's Political Party. In defense of the people, we take that wholeheartedly. We're not here to sell anything, to preach, or not even to persuade. We're here to raise the conscious level of a people who from day one had been left for dead. Our value had dwindled in terms of the so-called Industrial Revolution. And today what they refer to as science and technology. I've said before to my comrades, close friends of mine, you know, when I had the opportunity, the chance, you know, to talk with them, rap with them, dialogue with them, you know, hold what we refer to as ciphers and stuff. Ain't but a few times that black people are considered Americans. That's during the time of war and the Olympics. Sometimes the terms, the words, the language can be brutal. And I know many of us, most of us, you know, as black people may be sensitive to the word nigger. But this is a concrete reality, is what nigger is. In other words, It ain't but a couple of times that the state takes us off nigger status. That's during the time of the Olympics and time of war. And that should say it all for people who have collectively been through such dismal conditions, material conditions, which lead to our concrete realities. And it's because of that we understand, as our elders before understood, which brings us into a whole political relationship with the state. It's an irreconcilable relationship. And you know, there may be those, you know, who are trying to grasp that. You know, they're trying to make sense of it. You know, how could such a sweeping statement be made? We point that out from the viewpoint that if the government was put together by a certain segment of white society, which it is referred to as the 1% or whatever, then their ambitions could not have been the same for the non-whites. There are some whites who are Marxists, Leninists, you know, socialists, communists, who find the contradiction between the same white 1% and the so-called working class. And a segment of that is, a huge segment of that is white people. And if those white people have a problem with the state, then what would that say about black people having a problem with the state? And this is what we mean by it being irreconcilable. Because if you had 100 feet of space or 85 feet of space and 15 people, you could easily fit 15 people within 85 feet of space. But if you had 15 feet of space and trying to fit 85 people in it, chances are you were having problems. And so it's irreconcilable for 85 people to survive in 15 feet of space unless a bulk of that proportion of people would have to end up on the outside. And that in itself would cause conflict. There may be individualist mentality, but there may be collective mentality inside and outside. On the inside, it may not be that all of them may necessarily be together, but we can bet that the proportion that got left out of that 15 feet of space, the chances is that they would gel together and try to alleviate the problem that they have if everything is inside that 15 feet of space. And so therefore, it makes it irreconcilable if these 15 people or this 15% not willing to turn loose any of that because it pitted their survival, their livelihood, their preservation against the other 70% or the other overwhelming majority that got left out. And it is because of this that there's been those of us in the black collective who have become targets because of their understanding. And this is what has been the predicate of the political prisoner in America. The prisoner of conscience, the new African freedom fighter. A prisoner of war. And these were the Black Panther types / Black Liberation Army types who had understood this disproportion because of the personal ambitions of the steerers of the machine, the state machinery. And it is because of that which America accuses other countries of, that the evolution of the political prisoner. And the political prisoner on behalf of the Black collective was convinced that the state had to be dismantled if there was going to be any type of cohesion. All of these things that these, you know, talking heads, these pundits speak about when they proselytize about America can work, that America can be great, and all this other shit, you know, equality, and people can be treated as equals and justice and whatnot. The voting system would be relevant and so forth. Some of that may be realistic, and the rest is just sheer romanticism, version on some utopian ideal without looking at the concrete realities. And so political prisoners like George Jackson, who had been the quintessential type, who had learned to develop his mind to a state of a Ho Chi Minh, a Mao Zedong, a Che Guevara, a Milka Cabral, a Malcolm X, and so forth. And it was because of that that George Jackson had become viewed as a problem. And what is the prison industry, the prison industrial complex, but a wing of the capitalist structure? An arm or division of the capitalist structure because it's necessary. Why is the prison system necessary? The prison system is necessary due to the inherent contradictions of the system of capitalism, due to the selfish means of a small minority whom even some white conscious political theorists or what have you refer to as a plutocracy, named after the planet Pluto because it was the smallest of the nine planets. And so because of this plutocracy, then there would be contradictions all over the place. And if there's anybody who feel that they can dismantle that, feel free to do so. If you want to comment, question, whoever, press the one on your phone and we'll get you in. This is In Defense of the People Radio. We always appreciate and love our people to call in and speak their minds. This is a political platform where you don't have to be afraid to speak or be shy or timid or what have you. We all going through something collectively in this country as people of African descent, the descendants of the Africans who were brought here and turned into slaves and held in that position by the threat of violence. But it was because of these blaring contradictions that had to be heightened and brought out. It was a problem, as opposed to us just mainly hanging on to our, just shifting or keeping most of our brain power energy on just civil rights. Because that's about just basically writing up some legislation, something on paper. No. But there's nothing like your human rights as an individual. And this is what the Black liberation struggle was about. The liberation process, or the process of liberation, the revolutionary transformation of society. And that this black-on-black crime, violence, is a necessary political tool to prevent the revolutionary transformation of society, used as a political tool by the state, by the white ruling class. And it was because of that that George Jackson was instrumental in the prison system. He had started out with a couple of comrades that he had met, W.L. Nolan and Big Jake Lewis, set out to organize behind the wall and develop the family, which became later known as the Black Guerrilla Family. And Jackson had become recruited into the Black Panther Party as the Field Marshal. He was always known as Field Marshal George. And it was due to his political heightening that began to understand the conditions of Black people in relationship to the state. You know, it's not like, the average show or this thing when you talk about what is capitalism and so forth and whatnot. We can say it's a shame that the people are under a system, but haven't been educated by those who have claimed to be leaders, or those who have been picked to be leaders and whatnot, what have you. While at the same time, we go through the hell that we go through under this type of system. And so George Jackson and two brothers had become known as Solidat Brothers. And these brothers were Fleetwood Drumgo along with John Cluchet, who were accused of murdering a prison pig named John Mills in January 16, 1970. And this had morphed in to something much larger, which was followed by the attempted liberation, the Solidad Brothers, on the part of young Jonathan Jackson, George Jackson's younger brother, August 7, 1970. In which Jonathan Jackson and another of the brothers were killed in the process, along with the judge, who had a shotgun taped to his neck as he had been taken hostage, along with several jurors who were white women, in a van in Marion County. And there was this taking no quarter order on the part of the state, which means take them down regardless. It's sort of like we don't negotiate with hostages, hostage takers, so to speak. You know, that kind of thing. You know. But as a result of that, George Jackson's attitude about when the prison doors opened, you know, the dragons will emerge. And that was a ideology, a sense of self that Jackson had adopted from Chairman Mao, the Chinese Revolution. And so on August 21st, 1971, was the so-called prison rebellion in San Quentin, who also had what was referred to as the San Quentin Six. Now it was Hugo Yogi Pinnell, Willie Tate, Johnny Spain, David Johnson, Fleeted Rumgoon, and Louis Talamantes. And it was this day, August 21st, saw the murder of George Jackson. After a, what some refer to as a mayhem on the prison block, where three prison pigs and two inmates who were viewed as snitches had been killed. And it is said that George Jackson had obtained a gun. And he had obtained the gun, and this gun he had hid under a wig, that he had gotten this wig and this gun that was smuggled in into the prison by his attorney, Stephen Bingham. And this is the story that is told. And that when Jackson had returned to his cell, prison guards noticed a metalish object sticking out of his hair, which was supposedly a wig, and that he had asked Jackson to produce what it was that he had hidden under the wig. And this was the commencing of the rebellion, where Jackson had released a tier of POWs, and that they were scrambling around, and one of the white inmates at the time, who had admitted that they had put him up to murdering George Jackson, to assassinating George Jackson, and that he had said that he had went to Jackson and told Jackson what the plan was, and that he was not going to follow through because he had respect for George Jackson, because of what he stood for, because the prison system, the San Quentin prison system, was a place of barbarism. The Black Panther Party, those who were affiliated with the Black Panther Party, had later put the prison system in the proper context that it was the muse to break political dissidents. It was another mechanism by which to fight the revolutionary Black Power movement. In the special units designed to do what's called psychic driving. And psychic driving's ultimate goal was to get that prisoner of war to harm himself. And if he had not harmed himself, then he had at least become psychologically damaged. And George Jackson had wrote about that in one of two books that he had written, or a series of political pieces and letters that he had been writing to loved ones. And he had spoke about this tactic, this strategy. And so this story about Bingham passing George Jackson the wig and the pistol had been very problematic by those who knew. And there's so much that we could go on here. And I'm going to try my best to cover all of it. Okay, looking at the time. There are those who believe that that story was a concocted story, so much so that a while later, some time later, Jackson's mother, who's a strong black woman, and she understood Jackson's role in the revolutionary movement. And there were others who Jackson had affected. And that they were not buying the wig and the pistol story. So what was done years later, some time later, was a demonstration that many of us are not familiar with. A reenactment of the wig and pistol theory. The pistol and the wig having been tested, just as they test a weapon that has been used to murder someone and can tell from the firing of that weapon, the discharge of that weapon, that this was the weapon that was used in these tests. And sometimes they'll put these weapons underwater. And so the same type of mind that it took to get around to that was the same type of brilliant mind was used to see if this pistol and wig thing would hold up and work. From the distance that Jackson had walked from the visitation section back up to his cell. And that test failed miserably. And so this story, still to this day, has been viewed by some who know as bullshit. And it had come to the realization that George Jackson was set up to be murdered. And that Jackson, to escape, in a courtyard with a wall as high as, was it 40 feet, 30, 40, 50 feet high wall, to escape from prison out of a courtyard. And so these inconsistencies still to this day have not been turned loose. This is the importance of a George Jackson, our George, and the Europeans' George. And the George across the ocean, who the other George had been charging of tyranny. And our George had been charging the descendants of this George of tyranny. The same right that the George here had took up against the George in England is the same right that our George had taken up the same mentality and the attitude against the descendants of the George here. And so August 21st, 1971, we could never turn loose. And that history belongs not only to the People's Political Party and tonight's radio show, but it belongs to our youth, to our people collectively. George Jackson, to my understanding, from being told personally by one of the founders of the Black Panther Party, Bobby Seale, was the real deal. It's because Jackson's ability to comprehend and that he had sized up the prison system as a part of the capitalist structure, that they went hand in glove, that one was necessary to the other, and that the other could profit prison system. Today, we have the private prison industry and the continued what is referred to as the warehousing of black men, the control factor. The control factor short of deck. And this control factor short of deck is an offshoot of the Malthusian philosophy of practicing population control. From some honky who lived 200 some odd years ago. And this today referred to as Corrections Corporations of America, or Wackenhut, who are on the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, corporate shares. And this is the type of understanding that George Jackson had, and that George Jackson had developed that understanding in full. And that understanding was placed in blood in my eye. And that he could name some of the names of some of the white ruling class families of figures who could exploit racism and all the other isms that they could profit from, such as the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, the Mellons, standing that other names or other families that come about. You know, in more recent times even. And due to the political murder of George Jackson, to show the power, potential of a George Jackson, to demonstrate the influence of a George Jackson throughout the so-called prison system, prison industrial complex of America during that time. 3 weeks later was the Attica Prison Rebellion in New York State. 3 weeks later. And these brothers, conscious of the political murder of George Jackson, and the one thing that the state and the storytellers and whatnot, the orthodox way that the so-called Attica prison riot is told, the one thing they will not do is inform their reader or their audience member or their viewer that the fundamental purpose or the predicate of the Attica Prison Rebellion was in response to the political murder of George Jackson. And so it is that could strike fear in the system. Those who would go in the dark, would come from the underworld, committing what the state now calls crimes, the same crimes that were legal 200 some odd years ago, 300 years ago, which are now on the books as against the law, which are now on the books as illegal. The unconscious prisoner will become transformed into a conscious prisoner of war. And this is the, we can say, the two planks of the revolutionary struggle, behind the wall and beyond the wall. And that the galvanizing of those who have been exploited under the system of capitalism as prisoners, who could form into a powerful mass, overturn the system of fascism. What is fascism? Fascism is basically a combination of the government and the corporations, which we are now at the apex of. And that it is rearing its head all over the place now. And the more it rears its head, the more it rears its head, the more repressive the state becomes. This is what George Jackson had understood and had been putting out, that he had been politicizing behind the wall. And he had defined the guard, the warden, and all these other things in the proper perspective in relation to the capitalist structure of things. Because there's too many times where, you know, that, you know, people want to have these discussions on the problems and you know, whatnot, the issues and all these types of things, you know, and think they're getting at the to the meat. You know, when they're only fooling around with gravy. And we've had too much of that. This is why black people are struggling to advance in a lot of sectors. You know, in the meantime, our youth have been left for dead out in these mean streets, you know, in these little Vietnams, you know, as, you know, one of the brothers say, you know, because of that they could put together something where the system is ruled would be challenged. And this is historic. Now, this is a historical phenomenon. And so a lot of us have missed the mark when it comes to the prison system. You know, the supermax. You know. And of course, the repressive forces that came in and crushed the Attica prison rebellion. There are even some so-called black conscious figures who say prison riot. One of my comrades would say, someone I've been knowing for quite some time in my, you know, growth and development and understanding this shit. But, she would say, white people riot, black people rebel. And it made a lot of sense. Another way you can understand it is that the descendants of those who were forced into slavery by a law of nature to come out from underneath the system in which has been intact for several centuries would rebel. And that the whites would go into a riot over such things as labor disputes. Somewhere along those lines. And so after the 21st, the next day, of course, 22nd, which was another instrumental day in the history of African people on this side of the earth. The Haitian Rebellion is said to have begun on the 22nd of August in the small island region of Haiti in the Caribbean. It was the first, to my understanding, guerrilla campaign that had been carried out this side of the world and had predated many other guerrilla campaigns across the world. And the Haitian Rebellion, of course, are led by what is now known as the Maroons. And such figures as Toussaint L'Ouverture, and several other historical figures. And the Haitian Rebellion, which is what led to the Haitian Revolution, to come out from underneath the yoke of French dominance and French rule. The French, like the British, had begun to gobble up foreign lands and develop them as colonies. And these colonies were no more, no less than cash cows for the French. And the one staple crop in the Caribbean was the sugar cane, the sugar cane plantations. This is what the state of Louisiana is still known for. Domino sugar. And this is how the French were able to accumulate massive wealth and transport that wealth back to farther land of France. And the brutal rule of the French that had been meted out on the Africans who were there, who, by the way, the first kidnapped Africans had been brought to the Caribbean before North America. And we have been taught in these schools about 1619. And as, of course, was referred to as the 1619 Project, a book put together by black intellectuals, which deals with various topics and subjects. And in that book, by the way, is a chapter. And I was a little surprised, I must say. it's a chapter on capitalism. And this chapter is very critical. And it goes into what we have been talking about, how the capitalist system had been established off the slavery industry here in this part of the world. And I must say it's a well put together chapter. No. And so this was the French version of it in the Caribbean. And Haiti was one of their holdings. You know, they had been setting up these companies or corporate entities. And this is why when you may be traveling on the interstate and when you enter or leaving out of one city or state and you will see, you know, where it says in, of course, in short, you know, corporate limit or whatever. And that is based on the corporation being set up. And America was established as a corporation. And the holders of the shares, the stocks, the bonds was Washington and the crew. And this is the underlying factor, contrary to what we are told in the orthodox view of things. That was the underlying factor of the so-called U.S. Constitution, written by a handful of stockholders who had gotten behind closed doors. And this is documented. This is documented. And so-called black leadership has failed to educate black people in that view. Question is, did they fail on purpose or did they fail out of ignorance? If I was a betting man, I would say it was both. And then the next question comes down to who were those who failed to do so on purpose? Who were they? Who were they? And that is the question. This is what the French did, as well as the British, the Dutch, when they went to India, the country of India, in Central Asia, Southern Asia. They had the East India Company. The British had the British East India Company. Before them, the Dutch had the Dutch India Company. In Africa, they had the same companies. And in America, they had the same companies. And so we're looking at land holdings here. These were holdings. Some of us may have heard of stakeholders, like in the school system. Here you will have what's called the stockholders. And they had been accumulating mass capital from free labor. In places like Haiti. And the one thing about our people in Haiti that the Europeans were not able to totally wipe out the African structure that had been brought here with the Africans who were forced into slavery. This is why some of us who become conscious in spiritual level would seek to go to Haiti and get in touch with the closest thing to Africa when it comes to our traditional values and the way we worship spiritually. And so what the French and the later Europeans did to sort of wipe that out, of course, the missionaries who claimed to have been Christians and so forth, who had come to so-called civilized the natives, the indigenous people. And the word Caribbean derived from the name of one of the groups of indigenous black and brown people who were here, referred to as the Carib. In other words, it just don't have the word bean on the back of it. Caribbean, Caribbean. And this was the Carib people, C-A-R-I-B. And so they would pose these codes to obliterate the indigenous worship that was still permeating within the African population. And later Hollywood would do what? Would turn that into this evil practice, voodoo, this satanic, primitive, barbaric forms or practices as opposed to pristine Christianity. But they were able to hold on to it. And that said a lot about the brothers and sisters who were there, the African population that was there. And the same belief system played a very crucial role in the Haitian Revolution. The French at the time, even Napoleon, who had been so-called in possession of a strong French army, who in the process had been invading what is now known as Egypt around the same time, 1798, 1799, 1801. And as bad as the French were defeated. They were defeated in a revolutionary war carried out by the Haitian population. And there's these diaries that were kept by some of these so-called elite officers or those who specialized in quelling slave rebellions. And in one of these diaries, in one of these diaries that have been now turned and published into a book, where this European speaks about how swift the Haitians were. The so-called hit-and-run tactic and strategy that has been become popular in military strategy and military understand. The hit and harass. You know, knowing when to retreat. And these are the things that were done to the French in all their might. And this European would report that they were so swift, and it seemed that they would strike and then just disappear under the ground. And you wouldn't see them anymore. It is due to the treatment of one group of human beings who claim to be human beings of another group of people who for the most part were spiritualists. That led to the Haitian Revolution. It is no way possible that one group of people can perpetrate such type of inhumane treatment upon another and not expect some type of backlash. What the Hindus call karma. So we don't have to make up anything. The Haitian Revolution is a part of black people's historical struggle in the so-called Western Hemisphere. We should let the Haitian Revolution give us the confidence to come out from underneath this system. Contrary to all those who still try to convince black people that we can achieve equality. That the steerers of the machine would somehow, someday, relinquish their position and have us as their equals. In order for us to be their equals, we would have to be black capitalists. We would have to indulge in the same mad system that they indulge in. The same sophisticated, barbaric system that they indulge in. The same camouflage that they utilize on a daily basis. The same cosmetics that they employ on a daily basis. using the same media apparatuses that they use on a daily basis in order to be their equals. Capitalism doesn't have a color. Capitalism is capitalism. Whether it's black, brown, red, yellow, or white. We shouldn't want to jump out of the jelly into a jam. And it is the spirit of our people that has helped us survive so far in this country. But we're steadily taking the beat. And it's a steady war against black people, black and brown people, who have to deal with racial issues, class issues, and the women have to deal with sexism issues. Misogynism, or misogyny rather. And it is due to the Haitian Revolution that the loss of the French, that the other element in these wars, in these proxy wars, in these financial wars, in these bonanza wars, that when the money class called in their loans, that the French had to make a move. The French had to look at their portfolio and see what it was that they could give up to cover their loans. Today, that's what you call collateral. Lateral. Like in football, when two players are running laterally to each other, they are collateral, which means that the person who has the football can make a legal pass, person who's running laterally to him, as long as he doesn't cross in front of him. And that is what they call a lateral pass, to give you an idea of collateral. Because a loan had been passed from one end to the other and it was received. And so therefore, that loan had to be paid back. And so the French had to look at their portfolio to see what it was that they could give up to cover their asses. And so they gave up Louisiana, which was one of their holdings, to cover. And this is something that you're not going to get in the so-called history class in school. Not like talking about it. It may be some teacher out of 100. Who knows? But from my experience, this was never taught that way. It was never taught to young black impressionable teenagers sitting in a classroom that the basic reason why the French gave up Louisiana, why they sold Louisiana, was because of their loss to the black Africans in the Haitian Revolution and had put them in a serious business financial. This is the history of the Haitian Revolution. This is the predicate of the so-called Louisiana Purchase. But it's one thing, 220 years at least, the French, the state, the French government the French wing capitalist class have never relinquished their losses to the Haitians. And therefore, some deal was supposed to be struck. The French government would receive basically reparations from the newly established Haitian Republic, the first black republic in this part of the world. In fact, the first black modern-day republic unto this day in modern times. And it is no coincidence that the financial business holdings of Haiti today and its connections with the French when it comes to whatever natural mineral resources that exists in that part of the world. Or in the Caribbean. And that their American counterparts which have always had each other's back, whether they were French or British or now even German. One minute the Americans and the Germans were said to be enemies in World War One. In World War II, and so forth, and that the Russians and the Americans were allies, and now the Russians and the Americans had become enemies, and that the Americans and the Germans had become allies, and so forth. This Hegelian tactic, these Hegelian games and shenanigans that the Europeans played. And so the Americans sharing solidarity with the French had taken over the process of who was going to rule in Haiti. And so therefore the political games that have been carried out against Haiti going back to the days of Bill Clinton, rapist Bill Clinton, and the overthrow of a democratically elected president in John Aristide, and his political overthrow by the CIA using some group who had been referred to as the cannibals. This has been the historical struggle of Haiti unto this day. What is referred to as a strategy of tension. In other words, to keep Haiti off balance, to keep Haiti in constant static. So therefore, to make this so-called government, the ones who would come to the rescue and solve the problems that Haiti has been experiencing. It is a Machiavellian tactic, it is a Machiavellian strategy, whereby Machiavelli had informed the prince in educating him and indoctrinating him and teaching him on how to keep his holdings. And he would tell him every now and again, in so many words, you should create an enemy. What we know is the boogeyman effect. And you let him fester till it becomes painfully obvious in the eyes of the people that they need somebody to come and save them from the same entity that you put out there. This is what has been done to Haiti, let alone around the world. And the European subconscious is because they've never forgotten about the ass-whooping that the French had received from the Haitian guerrillas. And this has been studied by certain nations who are historically aware of the fact that the Europeans may be the leaders or whatnot in science and technology, but that the Europeans are not invincible. And the people in Vietnam understood that. And the people in Algeria understood it. And the people in Cuba understood it. People who simply want to come out from under a system that in the beginning was never meant to uplift them in the first place. And that is the historical legacy of the Haitian Revolution. And we must celebrate the Haitian Revolution no more, no less than what the Europeans celebrate on their 4th of July. We shouldn't be the only people who have become so brainwashed that we can relinquish our own in favor of someone else's, that we are fast and quick to celebrate somebody else's shit but ours. And of course, you have to look at the ramifications that has gotten us to this point. But we must become conscious of that. Simply feeling the crunch as the capitalist system is on its way out. But it will be brutal if we just stand idly by and let that phase that's in such ways to where our conditions become even more brutal. And these are fundamental things. There was no rocket science about any of this, none whatsoever. It is the will of a people who are determined to gain their freedom through the liberation process. And there could be no victory without struggle. Our ancestors went through a whole lot, not just from some perspective of some civil rights struggle, because all too many times it has been placed on the civil rights imagery. One minute America can claim these satellites like Hawaii and the Caribbean. And the next minute tell African people that that's a whole nother world apart. And that you're here in North America. North America, continental North America, is your history. And so therefore, civil rights. You know, Booker T. Washington, Du Bois, A. Philip Randolph, Martin Luther King, and the civil rights organizations, the NAACP, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the Congress of Racial Equality, Urban League, under Whitney Young. And that is what's been made to be our memory, our history, our collective conscience. And we've passed that down from one generation to the next. This is why we're having the problems trying to comprehend this police thing. And that is the problem. It's because some force, some unseen forces have constructed a memory and a state of mind that could take us no further than second base. When we have two more bases to reach to get home, you don't hit a pitch and the ball goes into the deepest corner of the baseball diamond and just run the first base and stop. That would be unusual. It will be abnormal. When you have the opportunity to even circle all four bags, what they call it, in the ballpark home run, which has been done before a number of times. You don't stop at first base. You got up there swinging with all your might and all your strength, and you came through, not only for yourself, but for the team. Because the mission was to get the home base. And at the plate is a catcher. And this catcher, if he has to, will put his body on the freaking line to stop you from doing what? Touching that bag with your foot or your hand. And if he has to block it, he's willing to do what it takes to keep you from touching that bag. And he leaves you with no other choice but to run his ass over. You're willing to make the sacrifice for the team, not only for yourself, but for the team. And when you run him over, you run him over with everything you got, is what it's going to take. And this is a historical phenomenon. And so try to, again, paint a picture so we can see, so we can get it in our psyches, all of the problems, all of the issues that we face on a daily basis collectively. Listen, I'm not talking about, you know, these stars and all these people who made money off of the rest of us and supported their shit and whatnot and went go see their movies and watch them at the game and, you know, buy their music and go see them in concert and all of that. They have a decision to make, too. There's no exceptions. And so from August 21st to August 22nd, two historical events in our lives, in our history, and especially black men don't take a stand, how the fuck we expect black women to do? No more sticking our head in the sand. There's no more trying to put the muzzle on our faces. no more try to drink it away, smoke it away, shop it away. It's staring us right in the face. Black man, what you gonna do? We're the original people on this earth. And if there's a great creator, a God that we wholeheartedly believe in, then if we take two steps forward, he'll take one with us. Real talk. The revolutionary transformation of society, it's a natural process. There's nothing abnormal about it. And this is what must take place from here to the continent and other peoples around the world on a larger scale. This is where we at, the signs of the times. So on that note, we're going to end. Thank those who have been listening. In Defense of the People Radio, every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, brought to you by the People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, National Chairman Matt Turner. My other host, co-host, Brother Motherland, our National Minister of Defense. And our assault technician on the ones and twos, Stymond O'Shun, our National Minister of Communication. And we say black power to black people and all power to the people. And your Uhuru, freedom through liberation. And we'll see you next week. We out of here.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.